The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Welcome to Town Matters on WWER. Town Matters is here to inform Colonial Beach residents about issues that you're concerned with from as close to the source as we can get. I'm George Nelson. In today's episode of Town Matters, I interview Nick Zabota, president of the board of the Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad. Nick and I talked about everything from what an EMT does to how to become a volunteer to what happens next as the result of the latest County Board of Supervisors meeting. I'm talking with Nick Zabota, the pastor of St. Mary's Episcopal Church. It's his day job, and currently associated with the Colonial Beach Rescue Squad.
That's right. I'm the president of the board of directors of the Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad, and also a member, of course. I'm an EMT, so I run calls with the squad.
How do you get to be the president?
Well, you have to be an active member of the squad, and when we have our elections each December, you have to be nominated by the nominating committee or from the floor and voted in.
How many members are there?
There's 20 members.
That's a lot. Are all of these members volunteers for the rescue squad itself?
Yes. These are all people who are volunteering their time and energy. No one is compensated who serves at the rescue squad at this point. We're all volunteers. And those are the members of the squad proper. We do also have a support team consisting of about 7 or 8 members at this time. And they do administrative tasks on our behalf. They do fundraising and things of that nature. So they don't run calls, but they still support the squad through their activities.
To be a member or to be involved with the Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad, do you have to live in the town of Colonial Beach?
No, in fact, we've got 2 members who live in King George and come here to volunteer. And we've got some that live in Westmoreland Shores, for instance, and some who live even further out in the county.
All right.
So you don't have to live in Colonial Beach proper to volunteer.
Then the next question is, are there openings for more volunteers, or is this pretty much a closed club?
There are definitely openings for more volunteers, and we welcome people to apply. If you want to apply, you can come down to the squad building and pick up an application or speak to any of our members.
Tell me, Nick, where is this location you speak of?
It's 225 Denison Street is the official address, but there's unfortunately no entrance to the squad building on the Denison Street side of the building. Isn't that wonderful how it works? So go around to the Wilder Avenue side of the building, or to the middle of the building by the garage doors, and knock on that door and you can get us that way.
If I remember correctly, there is a plain gray metal door.
Yes.
Between a couple of garage doors.
That's right.
And that, if you knock on that door, you're more likely to get somebody to hear you than if you come to the front door.
That's true.
All right.
I also welcome people to call me on my cell phone, which is 571-289-3224, or email me at nszobota@yahoo.com.
It would probably then be easier if you want to really get in touch with someone here to call ahead.
Yes.
Is there always someone here?
No, there's not always someone here. And that's part of what's been identified as a part of the issue we've been dealing with recently. We're a volunteer organization, so we don't staff 24/7. And in terms of our responsibility to respond to EMS calls in the area, we've been working with the county leadership and now state leadership on what exactly are we required to do and how often are we required to staff. And one of the things that was determined leading up to the special board meeting with Westmoreland County Board of Supervisors for today, April the 28th, 2022, was that we are not to be held accountable for responding to calls when we are not staffed at the station. And so when they give figures and stats, that's to take into account how we respond to calls when we are staffed. What's been decided that is incumbent upon us and necessary for us to do in order to work with the county on this is we do need to give the county our monthly schedule in advance that needs to go to the Sheriff's Department for dispatch and also the County Department of Emergency Services. When there's a change in the schedule, we need to inform them immediately so they have an updated schedule. And as far as when people are actually coming to the rescue station to staff the ambulances, we need to get on the radio with dispatch and say we're staffed. And then at the conclusion of that time period, get on the radio with them and say we are no longer staffed. So that when calls come in during that time period, when we're not staffed, they aren't dispatching us to the call. They're only dispatching us to calls when we are staffed and they're aware of it. In order to be staffed for an ambulance, we need someone to drive the ambulance and someone to be the provider in the back.
A provider is an EMT?
At least an EMT, at least an emergency medical technician.
In order to be an EMT, a provider, it's not just I'd like to do that, where do I sign up? There's something more complicated, yes?
Yes. So going to just the EMT qualifications, one has to take a class, which depending upon how often it's meeting is usually a 3-month commitment.
Where are these classes?
So they can be held in a variety of places as long as there's a certified instructor. I know that Rappahannock Community College, for instance, is having a class for EMT certification that begins on May 23rd of this year.
Where is the Rappahannock Community College?
You know, I wouldn't know that off the top of my head.
All right. Have to look that up on your Google.
Yeah, I have to look that in the Google machine. But also, there are certified instructors for EMT classes who will choose to offer these classes in local communities. So, for instance, when I took my EMT class, it was right here in Colonial Beach, and it was taught by Les Greeley, one of the life members of our squad, and he taught the classes over at Colonial Beach Volunteer Fire Department. That's where we met. So everything was here in town.
If there is anyone who's interested in becoming emergency medical technician qualified, they could contact you or someone here at the Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad, give you that information, and if enough people were interested, then maybe something could be put together.
That's possible. Once a person passes the EMT class, then there's a state test that one has to take, which includes a multiple choice section and then a practical section where you're actually demonstrating your EMT skills in a simulated environment.
A test.
Yes.
No one likes tests. So where would you take a test?
After passing the class, we were still in the middle of the pandemic. So I actually set it up to take it online. And it was one of those testing situations where you log in and you have to have a computer with a camera and a microphone so that a proctor on the other side of things is watching you to make sure that you're taking the test in an ethical way and, you know, don't have any AIDS in front of you or anything like that.
Okay. A person taking the test, would they have to show the administrator of the test that they knew how to do a CPR, chest compressions, mouth-to-mouth, that kind of thing?
So for the practical side of it, they have two different simulated calls with a person who's acting as the patient.
All right.
That you have to go through. One is for what we would call a medical call, which is where someone is experiencing some sort of distress with bodily function. It could be heart attack, a stroke, something of that nature that doesn't actually involve physical injury.
Right.
So you have to go through that call from start to finish. And those of us who took the class know that the very first thing that they want you to acknowledge is that you're looking, is the scene safe, and are you wearing your gloves and your other personal protective equipment? It starts from that point all the way to the conclusion of the call. And during the simulation, you're supposed to check the patient's vitals and do certain assessments and things like that.
Are you expected to be able to determine what the problem is somewhere along the way?
Yes, to some degree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then the same thing with a what we would call a trauma call, where there's actually a physical injury as part of the call. They go through a simulated process with that. And then you have to do one of a potential group of six skills that gets picked at random. And so that could be how to manage the person's airway, their breathing. So if the airway is potentially obstructed or things of that nature, it could be splinting, a broken limb or a joint, just different skills.
Would you have to be able to show that you're able to give someone a intramuscular shot as opposed to intravenous?
So EMTs can administer certain medications intramuscularly, but that, to my knowledge, is not part of the
test.
Yeah.
Okay. Just it is a skill maybe that you acquire?
We do training on that here at the squad. One of the ways we've done that is the instructor has got some chicken breasts from the supermarket, and we practice administering the shots to the chicken breast.
I'm sorry, I was relying on Sally to edit some of this out. And I will tell you, I was a medic in the Army.
Okay.
And we, in the Army, they're less sensitive about how you feel about things, and you just give each other shots.
Yeah.
The chicken breast. No, okay. So during the course of this instruction, the chickens become the beneficiary of whatever kind of shot they get, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I kind of wanted to get a sense of what you would do as an EMT, mm-hmm. because if someone was thinking, if they were listening to this and think, I would like to be that guy or that mm-hmm. woman, if they hear like, oh my gosh, I don't think I could do that, mm-hmm. then, you know, they would have an option to be a driver?
That's certainly possible. In order to be trained to be an ambulance driver, you would have to take what's known as an emergency vehicle operator's course, which can be taken online for the written portion. And then there's a practical portion that you have to go through with our training officer where cones are set up and you must negotiate the ambulance through the cones forward and in reverse.
Theoretically various, without knocking any of them over.
Yes, exactly.
This vehicle, this is not like a big, huge trailer kind of thing, is it?
No, it's like a slightly larger than a box truck.
So, okay, like a moving van, like one of these small U-Haul vans.
Yeah, so you know, it's on the larger end of the U-Haul van.
What do you haul around?
In terms of the ambulances,
right? In terms of going to a call or meeting the needs of the community, doing a volunteer thing.
So ambulances contain a stretcher for transporting patients. Of course, sometimes when we go to a call, the patient can walk to the ambulance, and that's fine. Other times, we remove the stretcher from the ambulance out the back and take the stretcher to the patient, lift the patient onto the stretcher, secure the patient, and then take the patient to the ambulance on the stretcher.
Like they do on TV.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And then we also have some other equipment in the ambulance that can help us move patients. There's a device called a Reeve sleeve, which is kind of like a small tarp with handles that's got some supporting ribs in it, and it can be used to carry patients.
All right.
We have a stair chair, which we can use to help move a patient up or down stairs if that's necessary.
As you describe these activities, I'm thinking, does a person who is going to be an EMT have to pass some test about their physical capabilities to lift and carry and do this kind of work?
That was not required. I took the EMT test.
All right.
But we did have to practice moving patients and lifting. Yeah.
When you do some hands-on training, do you do it on a live person or a dummy that you practice on?
Both. There's some training we would do on a live person. For instance, when we were practicing extracting people from vehicles, we had a live person in the front seat of a vehicle and practiced what we would do to actually move that person. There's also securing a person to a backboard if there's a concern about the spinal stabilization. And we practiced that on live individuals, securing them to the backboard.
You need volunteers to be those guys?
Well, a lot of times when I was taking the EMT class, some of the existing EMTs around here would volunteer to do that, or we would do it on each other, on members of the class, but sometimes it might be interesting to have other members of the community who are willing to volunteer.
Well, that would give somebody an insight, I guess, on what you do. And then maybe if they decide, well, I think I could do that, maybe then they would switch over to being a someone to sign up for the program.
Right. Now, in terms of actually volunteering with the squad, there's a few phases one would go through. So even if one is already certified as an EMT or has EVOC certification to drive an ambulance, you have to join the rescue squad first in order to function as one of us. So that's where getting the application would come in, filling that out.
Includes some kind of induction ceremony where there is incense and a ill-lit room.
We haven't done much of that.
No, okay.
Yeah. So the application, the completed application goes to our recruitment and retention committee, who evaluates the application, has an in-person interview with the candidate, and then makes a recommendation to the squad membership about whether or not to grant this person a six-month probationary membership. And then the squad membership votes to grant that or not.
So there might be something that would disqualify a person.
There are things that could disqualify a person. We do have a criminal background check, and there are certain things that could disqualify there. But what we encourage people to do who might be in that position, who are filling out an application, is to use the space on the application that's allotted for it to inform us about that up front, so we can take it into consideration. Because with the background check, we'll find out about it anyway, probably. So, you know, help us help you to figure out if it's a good fit or not.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a six-month probationary membership during which the person is expected to participate in squad duties and be a participating member of the squad. And then at the conclusion of that six-month period, there's another vote by the squad membership whether or not to grant the probationary member full membership.
When you get a call, how many people are in the ambulance going to the call?
So again, it depends upon how many we have staffed here at the station. As I said earlier, you need a driver and at least an EMT as a provider in the back. And you can have up to four people total counting the driver. So you can have the driver and three people in the back. Sometimes the additional people in the back could include a higher level of provider. So you could have an advanced EMT, an intermediate EMT, or a paramedic. And at a certain point, that will make the ambulance, instead of what we call a basic life support or BLS truck, it makes it an advanced life support or ALS truck because of what the higher level EMT or the paramedic is able to provide.
If you have a driver and just one paramedic or one EMT, the driver can assist the EMT to, if they indeed some physical activity is required, such as putting the person in the ambulance, that
yes.
kind of thing?
Yes.
Tell me, what is the higher level, the EMT or the paramedic?
Paramedic is a higher level than an EMT.
And is that a qualification you get by more training, going to more classes?
Yes, you'd have to sign up for a paramedic class. It involves more training and more practical experience.
How old does a person have to be to get involved here?
So to run as a regular senior member of the squad, you've got to be at least 18. We do have a juniors program that meets once a month, and I'll have to get back to you on what the minimum age is for that. But
so a high school person who has an interest in medicine,
yep.
or if they wanted to volunteer and get involved, there's a juniors program.
That's right. And some of the older juniors, 16, 17, 18, can also actually ride on the ambulance with duty crews.
All right. And how many are involved in the juniors program right now, do you know?
Off the top of my head, I believe there's four all individuals. Right.
In light of recent events, with all of the exciting political back and forth with the county supervisor meetings, the Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad is now no longer under the gun of being disbanded. Am I correct with that?
So at today's special meeting of the Board of Supervisors, April 28th, 2022, what happened was we brought to fruition the results of some meetings that have occurred since the prior Board of Supervisors meeting on April the 22nd. That work included meetings that involved leadership of the rescue squad with the chairman of the Board of Supervisors and also our supervisor, Tim Trivett, and town leaders, Mayor Robin Schick and Councilman Tom Moncure. And then there was also a meeting that occurred between leadership of the rescue squad the county administrator, Norm Razavi, and the leadership of the Westmoreland Department of Emergency Services, Chief Bill Cease, who was present by phone, and Assistant Chief Blake Bird. And we also had conversations with officials from the Virginia State Office of Emergency Medical Services. And that's where we really came to an agreement that as a volunteer organization, we are not required to staff 24/7. And in terms of evaluating our performance and our service to the citizens, what really needs to be looked at for metrics is the times we are staffed. And again, we've notified dispatch and all the others who need to know that we're staffed at that point. And at the same time, there's a desire from the county leadership to see us step up a little bit more than we have been. So we came up with some benchmarks that we're going to follow at this point, including how often we're going to staff. And we've made that commitment to the county. And there's going to be some ongoing discussion with our leadership and the county leadership on a bi-monthly basis to track how we're doing with that, and also to track where we can perhaps continue to expand and grow. So all this was put on the table at tonight's Board of Supervisors meeting as a way forward and as a way that the County Board of Supervisors could vote those conditions in place, which would thus allow the county administrator to sign off on the recertification.
And so everybody acting in good faith for the best result for the county and for Colonial Beach, we now are secure that we have the volunteer group in place and ready to move forward.
Yeah, so the certification is the two-year certification, so we'd have to go for recertification again in 2024. Also, if we don't meet the conditions that were established at tonight's County Board of Supervisors meeting, the state can get involved in putting various sanctions in place. The county, can revisit whether or not they would like us to continue as an organization responding to 911 calls in the area. If for some reason we're told we can no longer respond to 911 calls in Westmoreland County, which is something that we absolutely want to continue to do, and tonight allows us to do that, we can still, if we're not responding to 911 calls with the permission of the county, operate as an organization doing other things, transporting from facility to facility or that sort of thing. But that's not really our purpose. Our purpose is to respond to 911 calls and serve the community that way.
In light of the other kinds of things you might do, often when the volunteer rescue squad gets a call, someone is sick or injured and has to go to the hospital.
Right.
And the Colonial Beach Rescue Squad can do that, yes?
Yes.
Not every call requires transport.
That's correct.
And the word transport is kind of a magical term, right? If you do a transport, then somehow you get a smiley face or check in the box.
Well, part of what comes into play with transports is that's really the only activity from which compensation comes financially.
To whom?
What happens with the transport is we acquire the patient's insurance information or their Medicaid or Medicare information.
Are you saying that, I'm sorry, sir, we can't take you to the hospital, you don't have your insurance card?
No, we don't say that. If a transport is required and the patient desires to be transported, we will always transport.
All right, and then you work out the administrative details after at the hospital after you've taken them there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially, what happens is the insurance or Medicare or Medicaid get charged for the transport. Where the funding for the transport goes is to an account that we as a rescue squad have set up with Westmoreland County. Every year in their budget, Westmoreland County gives us $50,000 in this revenue for recovery account against which we can submit invoices and bills to the county, and they will pay out of that account.
Now, this $50,000 then is a budget to keep the lights on.
Yes.
All right.
The money that comes in from the transports, the money that's charged for the transports, goes into that account.
To make the county happy, it would be good for them to see Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad make $50,000 in fees and charges in transporting?
Well, that's certainly a factor that can come into play. We have to balance that, we believe, at Colonial Beach Volunteer Rescue Squad with certain realities about what the patient needs and wants.
So no kidnapping.
Right, there's no kidnapping. We can't force someone to go to the hospital.
Okay.
Even if we think, to our best medical knowledge, that the person really should go to the hospital, if the person says no, then we can't transport them. We get them to sign a patient refusal and acknowledge that we said, we think you should go, they declined. And we note that in that case, it was a refusal against medical advice.
Gotcha.
You know, there are some times when our best determination is, well, this patient doesn't really need to be transported, and we would say so. There are some situations where, you know, with your cuts and scrapes and whatnot, we offer first aid and take care of that, but the hospital really isn't needed, or the person can very easily get it checked out with a doctor the next day. Or sometimes even there are situations where the person should go to the hospital, but it's okay for them to go by their personal vehicle. Someone can drive them. We don't really need to transport.
What about if a person, in the opinion, in the expert medical opinion of the paramedic or the EMT, doesn't need to go to the hospital but wants to go to the hospital?
In that case, we would transport.
All right.
Yeah, if the person says, take me to the hospital, we'll take you to the hospital.
Do you wait around, see if they need a ride back?
No, we do not. They're responsible for their own ride back. And I don't know if that came through over the recording, but the tones have just gone off, so I'm just checking my phone to see if it might be us. Yeah, I heard Rescue Station 1. I may have to respond to that call. Let me check with Pat.
Okay, this is exciting. Yeah. An actual call here during my interview. I hope no one is injured. I'm going to follow you, Nick.
Okay. Hey, Pat. We also have active 911 on our phone.
So we're going from the office to the garage bay where the ambulance sleeps. All right, our EMT is on the premises here. We're going to go talk to her.
Pat? Ah. Yeah, sorry. Do you have your patient with you?
Yeah, that's Harborview Circle.
Okay, so where's that?
That's out in Harborview.
Okay.
No, it's not us.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
Not us.
Okay, so there was an emergency call that you got a notice on your phone?
No, not on the phone, on the radio.
On the radio.
Which covers the entire county.
And this notice was to alert someone that someone needed some medical help.
Yep. And it's outside of what we call our first due, which is the area in which we respond.
So it was beyond your range, or beyond the range of the Colonial Beach Rescue Squad.
Yes.
I will not be able to jump in the ambulance with you to go there
right
now. Someone else will respond to that out in the county.
Yes.
Well, Nick, if I could think of more questions to ask you, I would. It has been real,
yeah.
And I appreciate your time.
The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.